Welcome to this week's edition of Eye on the Peninsula, Tuesday the 10th of May. I'm Piers Cunningham, broadcasting from the RPPFM studios in Mornington. Good afternoon. Today on Eye on the Peninsula, we hear from former Mayor of Frankston City, Councillor Sandra Mayer, the bandicoot, Mr. David Harrison, and important information you need to know regarding the NBN rollout. But first, splashed across the Mornington Peninsula news last week was details of Mornington Peninsula Mayor Councillor Graham Pittock's abandonment of a trade mission on an 8 to 10 day visit to China to give the Shire experience of doing business internationally. Deborah Maher caught up with Mayor Councillor Pittock to discuss why his mission to China is cancelled.
I was going over to China just to go on a business delegation and see how the Chinese people, and I respect Chinese people too actually, China's done a wonderful job, see how they do business. You know, they've got the opportunity of just almost just absorbing us into their economy. So that's one thing I don't think we're interested in. Look, it was good for the council. In the end, it fell through because we just couldn't join the ends up.
You're looking at going in June, is that right?
Oh, there's another one on offer. And okay. It's very cheap for us to do it. Now, the only expense this one incurred, I thought that they'd already paid for the airfare, but they hadn't, so it was only $200 for a visa. Mm. We learned a little bit of Chinese travel arrangement.
Is the peninsula expecting more Chinese investors to buy up local land and businesses?
Absolutely. We're already having people come to us now. Can we do this? Can we do that?
Is that a good thing?
Well, in Dramana's case, it wasn't. A Chinaman just bought 50 acres here. It was crucial for our recreation. Foreign Investment Review Board have got to look at this and say, why did they buy it? And if they have bought it, he has got to now demonstrate that he'll be using that land for something other than land banking.
What can we do about this, Mayor Councillor Pittock?
I was surprised that they would actually buy this 50 acres in Dramana.
What are they going to do with it?
Well, I don't know, but I hope they're just not going to sit on it and wait for the green wedge to dissolve and then subdivide it, because this is green wedge land, so 50 acres, they can't put a house on it. So I would say it looks like land banking. It was a privately owned block of land. We could have put all sorts of things on it, but now it'll just sit there.
Who's it going to advantage at the end of the day?
Were the English a good thing? Were the Japanese a good thing? Were the Americans a good thing? Were the Chinese a good thing? You'd have to say yes, they're injecting money, but when, you know, and it's got to be controlled. The Foreign Investment Review Board, that's their job, they've got to control it. But this 50 acres, I keep harking back to the 50 acres. I know of other deals, but I can't really talk about it. This 50 acres, to me, it's ridiculous that should be sold off to a foreign purchaser, really, for land banking.
It appears that land banking and development creep on the peninsula is becoming an issue, with small land parcels being purchased by Chinese investors and falling under the radar of the Foreign Investment Review Board laws. Next up, the Rye Tip. The Mayor had this to say about the closing of the tip in a couple of years and its future.
Well, there's many years left in it if we develop it, put in another, I think, $12 million, put in another cell. Why do we want a tip? That's the thing. Because it's nice and convenient for people to go and tip things there, or is it cheaper to tip things there? It probably is cheaper, but as for ease, there'll be a transfer station somewhere where people will be able to dump their rubbish, and that'll be transferred down to probably somewhere like Alamore, I think.
Yeah, that's right. So does that include the recycling as well, or is that just the tip as it is in its own form now?
Well, something would include the recycling, but that's one of the most important things that will happen. Improving our recycle school.
So your proposal is to put a solar farm there. How's that going to all pan out?
This is a pipe dream of mine, really. And strangely enough, you know, I found out about this in Paris, actually, a great thing. But what can you do with a tip? Truman's Road is suffering. It just subsides all the time, and the seepage coming out of there is not doing the town any good. This one is even deeper, so it'll be subsiding for the next 50 or 100 years. What can you do with that land? Well, one thing you can do is put light solar panels on top, a big solar farm. And my theory and a few others that I've been talking to is that when we have the brownouts in summer, particularly in the southern peninsula, that's when the solar farm is functioning at its best. It will save the $30-odd million that United Energy are going to have to invest with a new line coming down from Yallourn or wherever the substation is for the peninsula.
And this is going to help carbon emissions down here too, isn't it?
Absolutely. By getting the waste off the peninsula, we don't then have to take responsibility. flexibility for those carbon emissions. That's not the real reason, but the solar panels will undoubtedly help our carbon emissions.
The cost of that, do we have any idea of that at the moment?
Well, we don't even know how we finance it. And one really novel way of financing it is people that can't have solar panels and want solar panels will be able to buy a solar panel and get the output from that farm. So, you know, I don't think the cost is an issue. So how good would that be? You get 6 kilowatts of energy, you buy that from that solar farm, probably cost you $10,000 instead of $13,000 putting it on your roof. I think that would be quite popular. The Rye Tip happens to be in one of the best geothermal areas in Victoria, if not Australia. Charles Davidson, he's certainly showed us that.
Yes, down there at Peninsula Springs.
Well, there's a lot more opportunity there. In fact, next door, Hiltonia, which has been bought by the Chinese, they're investing a lot of money and want to start up another spa. And Charles is quite happy about that. So there's one area where China's investment is doing good things for the peninsula and probably Australia. And that's not the only one. He hopes that the whole area will be like a health spa resort mecca. That would be an absolute positive for us.
That's all going to help the local economy and flow on from there. Then Deborah asked,
how's the Shire's budget shaping up so far?
The Shire's budget with the rate capping, etc.
It's tough, isn't it?
Well, it's not. Our CEO has made such enormous savings since he started just over 12 months ago. We've actually identified a surplus, so rates will probably only go up maybe 2%.
Oh, not the 2.5, supposedly.
No, and I'm not quite sure the actual yet, because there's a lot of people still putting in submissions that will have to be paid for, but we have a surplus that we're going to spend on infrastructure projects that previously we didn't have the money to do. They're just from savings made by the current CEO and his people.
But this 2.5%, some councillors are crying poor and they're going to have to cost shift somewhere on the line to meet demands of ratepayers.
Well, some councils probably don't run as efficiently as they should, but even us, I'm assured that 2.5% 3 or 4 years down the track will not be enough, because EBA agreements, etc., are going up to 3%, 3.5%. So we're paying the staff over and above that 2.5%. So we're going to have to lift it at some stage.
How did you describe your budget, just in a phrase?
I'd say solid.
But very fair? Solid. Solid and fair?
Yeah. I'd say it puts the Shire in a good, very good position.
Arthur Seat Skylift construction is well underway after the takeover of management by the state government from the Mornington Peninsula Shire. But it appears the state government is sitting on its hands when it comes to bushfire management on Arthur's Seat.
State government has taken over management of the Skylift at Arthur's Seat, which you said was a slap in the face for local government. The question has arisen about bushfires, and it doesn't seem to me that the state government is taking too much notice of that. Should we be worried about bushfires up there in the coming months and when it opens at the end of the year, hopefully, when thousands of tourists have flocked there?
Well, I'm an old fiery and I've been up the top of that mountain when there's fires going, and how that can get a BAL rating of 12.5, which is one of the lowest fire ratings a building can have, it astounds me. That's why we're reasonably happy the Minister took it out of our hands.
Yeah, but we don't want to be putting people's lives at risk.
That's now not our decision. That is the Minister's decision. He's welcome to it. People are going to go up there. They're going to leave their cars at the bottom. They're going to go up there, have a meal probably. Go and have a walk through Seawinds Park. And then if a fire happens, the chairlift stops. There's no way of getting down. There's no buses up there. There's no cars. There are cars down the bottom. That really worries me. And there's a limit on the amount of people the Skylift have said, the Skylift Consortium said they'll let into that building. So to me, it's a very precarious position to be in.
Will there be any shelter up there?
The problem. There's no bunkers or anything. Anyway, that's the decision the Minister's going to have to make, and be it on his head if there are issues.
It's going to be pretty exciting on the 11th of May with some pylons going in, and I believe they're going to get a helicopter up there, so I think we'll have a lot of media people up there and onlookers.
I know it's going to be a good tourist attraction. We've had to put no money into it, so it should be good for the economy of Cremana, Red Hill and Rosebud.
Do you know how much it's going to cost?
Oh, I haven't got the faintest idea. This only goes up 1 kilometre and 1,000 feet, so it's not that spectacular. So...
I tell you what, it's higher than what it looks.
Yeah, it does. It's 1,000 feet.
I wonder what the cost will be to enjoy a ride on Skylift when it opens, hopefully at the end of this year. On closing, will Councillor Antonella Celli appeal the decision handed down by the Shire for her to repay monies she supposedly overspent?
Councillor Celli, of course, that's splashed all across the paper.
Yep.
Well, do you think that's been resolved? Do you think she'll come back with an appeal?
Well, it won't get back to council, but the council's made a decision, so something's going to have to happen.
Look out for more legal bills.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Thank you to Mayor Councillor Graham Pittick for his time, Deborah Mark compiling that story. Don't move that dial, because coming up is the Bandicoot. The Morning to Peninsula Bandicoot has joined Eye on the Peninsula again. He talks with Brendan Telfer, presenter of The Breakfast Club, about a rumour he is hearing within the Mornington Peninsula Shire walls.
There's some rumours going around, as people have probably read or heard, that the Shire has got rid of a municipal charge out of their rates, but it's now constructed a waste charge as an item outside the rate cap. There are some rumours swirling around that I'm hoping to catch up with today about how our waste is going to be treated in terms of how it's going to be charged for. I'll have some news on that for next week, but it doesn't seem a good thing for the denizens of the peninsula, but I'm hoping that the news is not as bad as I'm hearing it might be.
So the idea is this would be outside of the new rate caps, which would
allow
the Shire then to impost as much as it likes or what it thinks is tolerable?
Well, it's a bit like the friend saying of the raising tax is a bit like plucking a goose. The idea is to get the most amount of feathers with the least amount of hissing. So I suspect what they'll try to do is to ease the charge up, because it's one area outside the rate cap. Of course, they can raise extra money if they can justify it. And it's also protective against the state government actually raising the levy on waste disposal. So it makes sense, and it also makes sense that they would be trying to achieve a little more income through that means. Although if they'd been at the Red Hill Market at the weekend on Saturday morning, they would have found 81 at least illegally parked cars, and I don't know how much that is, but let's say $100 each they would have raised in a single morning, which is probably more than they would have paid the parking inspector for that morning's work.
The Bandicoot is also keeping an eye on the federal election.
Well, we've reflected very briefly on the election that's just started and have assured the Bandicoot's readers that we will be keeping an eye on it in all material ways, including keeping an eye on our local federal member, Mr Hunt, the Minister for the Environment. So we'll be keeping an eye on him in rising sea levels.
Well, he's got a big role to play as well. He's a front bencher, so I would imagine that Mr Turnbull is going to be turning to him quite a lot.
Well, he is. One has to take the view that since he's our local member, and since we have 10% of Victoria's coastline, so there's quite a lot of us, not us at Red Hill, but some of those on the lower plains, we'll be a bit concerned about sea level rise and such things.
He seems to think the disruption of the Frankston line is minimal, much to his satisfaction.
Overall terms, I've been using the train a bit, and we go sailing through a couple of stations by either a specially constructed line around the side of the work. It all seems to be very well planned and very well executed, so there's a fair bit of digging to be done to get those lines under the roads, but it's probably going to be what you might call minimal disruption.
So there you have it. If you want to know more about what the Mornington Peninsula Bandicoot is up to, visit his Facebook page, the Mornington Peninsula Bandicoot. Thank you to Brendan Telfer and David Harrison for their weekly report. Up next, the former Frankston City Mayor talks about a domestic violence candlelight vigil. The number of families living with domestic violence is increasing. Not a lot of funds and services are put in place as preventative measure for domestic violence. Former Mayor of Frankston City, Councillor Sandra Mayer, lives two lives. One as a councillor serving the people of Frankston City, and the other a singer-songwriter. Last week, she showcased her new song, Getaway, at a candlelight vigil held in Federation Square to remember those who had sadly passed away at the hands of a perpetrator in a domestic violence situation.
That's an event that's held every year. It's always the first Wednesday in May, and it's a national event. So Safe Steps hosts the Victorian Vigil, and it's for victims of family violence and victims, meaning people who didn't make it out. So everyone gets a candle and we remember people who have been lost, and we think of everyone who's suffered through it. And they do an honour roll and they show names of people, and the family and friends come along and we all get together. And the minister came along and spoke, Fiona Richardson, which was wonderful. We had Harrison Craig there performing. We had a police member, and at the very end they played my video, which was fantastic. It was the last thing people saw before they left.
She told Deborah Maher what inspired her to write such an emotive piece of music.
But coming out of that clothesline project thing, I felt so angry. You don't have to know somebody to hear a story like that and have empathy for what they're going through. And I came home and I sat down at my piano and I thought, right, I'd been thinking about writing another song about it, and I've been writing music since I was 12 years old. I've got a university degree, Bachelor of Arts major in music. Obviously, over the years, there were times where I just stopped writing because I'm trying to raise children on my own. Politics is a pretty rough game and it's very busy. But I sat down and I wrote this song, and as the words came, I couldn't even sing it. I was just crying so much. And I thought, yeah, I think I'm onto something here. And I recorded a demo at home and started playing it for people. And I had such a strong response and a lot of support. And I thought, I'm going to go out and record this professionally. I'd put some money away when I was mayor last year, and I found someone to do a music video as well, and they had done the music video for Briggs, The Children Came Back, it's called, and it was on Rage. I thought, well, I've got a pretty good chance of getting on TV here and getting the message out, giving a voice to victims.
Councillor Mayer had an article written about her.
I've outed myself now. So I was in The Age yesterday, and everybody now knows that I went through this very, very long time ago myself. While I was in the relationship, I did write a song, but it was a very different feel to it. It was more, geez, this relationship's really hard. And coming out the other end now and having attended workshops, Dr. Dina McMillan, I don't know if you're familiar with her work, but I recommend that anybody who's knows someone who's going through this or is going through it themselves, take a look. She's out on social media. I'd worked with her and I thought, geez, I really want to do something about this. I've had my own experience. And then I went to a clothesline project held by Sonia Kilkenny, and Minister Richardson was there as well. And I heard so many women get up and telling their stories, saying, you know, I called the police because he breached his intervention order and they didn't come, and the courts didn't, you know, punish him for it. And I had to represent myself in court, and because he went to every single lawyer and the Royal Commission's findings hadn't come out yet. So we didn't know what to expect. I started talking to Sandy Walters from the Sisterhood FMP, who had been Tour Library president, and she told me that she'd done an analysis of the service system and a gap analysis, and she knew where the gaps were. She said nobody's really doing prevention properly. They're not really measuring outcomes. There was so many things that, you know, that weren't working well, and so she made a submission to the Royal Commission. There were so many people that made submissions, and in the end we were really happy with the recommendations that were made, even happier that the state government said that they were going to actually implement all of those recommendations. All the money that they've put in with this state budget, everything that's been happening has just been a big win for the sector, I think.
She had this to say about the issues with intergenerational patterns within a home where domestic violence is perceived as the norm.
You know, there have been a number of us who have experienced some kind of abuse, but we don't realise that it is abuse because it is something that we've grown up with, and that's why we repeat the pattern as adults in our relationships. There's a lot of literature out there about it. You do believe that you deserve it when you get into an adult relationship like that because you grew up like that. You were told that, you know, you weren't valued, or, you know, yelling was just normal, or whatever it was. And the other thing I just want to stress is that I think that there's this idea out in the public, and I think it's changing now, that abuse is physical. And most of the figures that we have on abuse is reported violence. So it's where the police have been called in, it's where you've presented to hospital or the doctors or something like that. Whereas there's a lot of abuse which is actually psychological, and that's very damaging, and that's not reported. So when you consider that one in three women have been physically abused and that's been reported, think about how many women haven't reported it because they're being psychologically manipulated. You're not going to ring the police and say, he swore at me, called me names, put me down. Bless Rosie Batty. She's gone out there and really brought awareness to this issue. And people are now starting to understand that if you're in a situation where you're living in fear and your partner's trying to control you, and I'm not vilifying men, it could be a man, it could be a woman, you could be an elderly person and it's your child. Whoever it is, she's brought so much awareness and people now are understanding that it's not just physical, that's one almost small part of it, because there's so much more to abuse and people need to understand.
As a counsellor, she knows what health services need funding in the Frankston municipality. Is the recent 2.5% rate cap imposed on councils in Victoria a problem supporting and setting up preventative services? She explains.
There are primary, secondary and tertiary services. By the time you get to the tertiary level, that's the crisis end for domestic violence, you know, where the police get involved, the courts and everyone else. Secondary is probably more counselling and things like that, but primary is the front door. So where council deals in is prevention, and that is absolutely critical. Most of the funding currently is going to the crisis end, and it's just getting worse. So we have statistics that we've obtained through council where it was at about $13.5 billion nationally back in 2012, and the data that's been collected from four different sources, which is only reported violence, again, where, you know, people, it's actually gotten quite bad physically, so it doesn't include the other kinds, it's estimated to have increased this year to $14 billion. So it's actually increasing. Officially, the figures are at $10 billion, but I actually don't believe that. I think it's a lot worse than that. So how do we address prevention when we've had rate capping imposed on us? And I can understand the idea that people have that, oh, you know, councils put the rates up so much and, we, you know, we can't afford it. For what you pay for a year, you get so much for that. And we provide services, we used to say from cradle to grave, but it's now from womb to tomb. So we only have a very, very small budget to implement our domestic violence prevention plan that we have. And our hands are tied. We can't really do anything, which is why I thought, as a leader in the community and as someone who's experienced this, who's passionate about it, I really wanted to come in and get together with my local community, raise some money and put together a prevention program. So I'm actually in the process of doing that at the moment.
Crisis centres are bursting at the seams. So what's the solution?
There's a lot going on. I think if there was an easy solution, we would have found it by now. And there is no excuse for violence. But it is, again, it's intergenerational. And I'm concerned that these crisis centres are bursting at the seams. So all this extra money, millions and millions of dollars, is being thrown at the crisis end. But if they don't start focusing more on prevention, it's only going to keep getting worse. It's going to keep compounding, because that's what's been happening. The national plan's been going since 2010. So if it's actually gotten worse, then obviously what they're doing is not working. They're not putting enough money in. And the federal government needs to follow in the steps of the state government and really start putting more money in. And I hope that if our federal candidates are listening, that they will pay attention and start doing that. I've spoken to both of them about it already.
If you or someone you know is living with domestic violence, what should they do?
Get help. Reach out to somebody. Get information from reliable sources. Do it in a safe way. All of the websites have a quick exit button. So you can click on that and you can get out very quickly. And some of them, I think, have now put in something so that he can't check your browser history as well. So one thing that people need to be, I shouldn't have said he, but being politically correct. But the other thing is they can track your phone as well. So you need to check that, because I looked at my iPhone and you can tell where I frequently go from that. So you've got to disable those things. If you leave, get a new phone. If you want to call 000 or 1-800-RESPECT, use your friend's phone. Use someone else's phone, so then they can't see that if you haven't yet left. When you're leaving, plan it carefully. That's why the song is called Getaway and not Runaway. You know, it says runaway right through the song. I'm trying to tell people to get out, because the likelihood is things aren't going to change. They're going to escalate. I want to stop people from dying.
Well, the song Getaway is absolutely fabulous. The message is very, very strong. You need to go to the Facebook page. What is it?
So www.facebook.com/ShunYourMayaMusic.
That's interesting. Now, we'll just go back. We know that you live two lives now. You put the cap on as Councillor Sandra Mayer at the Frankston City Council, and you're also this beautiful singer that we want to hear more from you. We want to hear more from you, and it is Shana.
My name is legally Sandra. That's right. It was just a nod to my heritage, to my family, who I love dearly. We're very close, and yeah, I was Shania before I became a councillor. So that's just what everyone knew me as. And then I decided to go with my legal name to run for council.
Well, all very powerful words, powerful lyrics, beautiful melody. Get on and listen to the words and the beautiful video that Shania has put together. Thank you so much. It's very empowering for everybody. So just follow the steps that Shania or the Councillor Mayor has given to us today. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on the show.
We'll end on a little more of Shania Mayer's song titled Getaway. So take the advice of Councillor Mayer's, seek help and listen to her song on Facebook, Shania Getaway. Shania is spelled S-H-A-N-I-A. We'll put a link to the Facebook page and the song on the Eye on the Peninsula Facebook page. Deborah Maher there with Shania Mayer, who is also a Frankston City Councillor, Sandra Mayer. Don't go away. Next, I will update you with the latest on the NBN rollout. Then the common minor bird pest problem on the peninsula. I've got Michael Moore, the Manager of State Corporate Affairs, in the studio. Michael's been very kind to come in and talk to us this morning a little bit about the NBN rollout, which is proceeding apace. And I thought I'd just start by asking Michael, what is the NBN? Can you explain for our listeners some of the benefits that people will eventually get when it's available in their area?
The NBN, or National Broadband Network, came about as a government initiative some years back to deliver very fast broadband, or fast broadband, to all Australians and homes and businesses. There was a recognition, and I think it's become more apparent as the years have gone by since the initiative was started, that Australia is lagging behind in broadband speeds compared to other countries. And there's an ever-increasing need for broadband for businesses, especially in their technology areas, but all sorts of businesses, you know, whether it's marketing or delivering files online, streaming services. It's certainly going to deliver some great benefits to Australians, businesses, but also Australian households, obviously with entertainment options changing, with live streaming and products such as Netflix, Australians really are demanding better broadband services.
Yeah, and I guess the average home these days has got several wireless devices all often working at the same time. So if you've got your standard ADSL, which a lot of people have got at the moment, that can really struggle if you've got multiple devices. The kids are on the iPads, you're on your laptop, and phones are going as well. All those things, if they can share a faster sort of speed to start with, then they're going to work better. And as you mentioned, the move to things like Netflix and Stan and Presto, those services also have been seen to actually cause a slowdown at certain times of day when people switch those things on at night, for example. There can be a noticeable drop in speeds that people experience. What are the sort of minimum speeds that are being guaranteed as part of the NBN?
Well, the government, in their statement of expectations, as they call it, requires us to deliver a minimum download speed of 25 megabits per second. But they also are looking for faster speeds of at least 50 megabits per second for everyone who's on a fixed line or fibre service into the future as soon as possible. So I suppose for people who haven't experienced that speed, it's hard to think of what it'd be like, but you're going to experience speeds that are three, four times faster,
yep.
Which we, at least. And a nice little example is, I was thinking about, everyone's tried to watch a YouTube video and it's buffer, what we call buffer, where it stops, and it's very, very frustrating. Mm. And YouTube's a form of streaming. So as entertainment moves into the streaming services such as Netflix, people just can't have those services if they've got a slower speed and it's buffering. You're sitting down watching a movie or a television show and it's buffering. It's not going to be much fun.
In some cases, a fixed wireless service is being offered on the peninsula. Can you explain where and why that's the case?
Yeah, certainly. In areas such as Main Ridge, Shoreham, Tyabb, I think, and parts of Red Hill, there will be sort of more sparsely populated areas where it's just not economical to roll out a fixed line. It operates in a similar way to your mobile broadband, but there's only a fixed number of premises that can be on a wireless tower, so therefore you're not going to get those fluctuations in speed that you get on mobile broadband, because people can't come in and out of the area using their phones to access it. Only the houses with the aerials can access it, and it's proving a real success. I mean, it's in fact it's been rolled out probably quicker in one sense than the fibre lines because it's easy to roll out.
So what's going to happen with all this, just so listeners are understanding, is that if you've got an ADSL home broadband service at the moment, what will happen is that the NBN will become available in your area over the next, I think it's approximately the next 18 months that's been forecast to be available on the peninsula, and earlier in some cases. Will you need to upgrade your equipment? Your current ADSL service provider very likely will be able to offer you an NBN service. So that's the way it'll work. You won't need to worry about your service. It'll switch over. You will possibly need a specialised modem to work with the NBN.
When you decide, or if you decide to take a NBN service, you'll talk to your service provider and you work out with them, do you need a new modem? Work out what's the right package for you, because some people don't need 25 megabits per second. Some people are currently buying a 12 megabit per second package. Yep. Depends on what you want to do.
Yep.
So you can, you know, you'll work that out with your service provider, and yeah, and it's pretty easy hookup. The rollout's really kicked off on the peninsula. We've already got parts of Mount Eliza live. We're working into Mornington at the moment and sort of heading down the peninsula. So over the next couple of months, construction will start in a number of areas heading south on the peninsula. Eventually, people will need to switch over to the NBN.
So it'll be compulsory. If you want to have broadband, it's going to be through the NBN.
Yeah, that's right. And also with your telephone service as well. So it's an 18-month time frame from when it goes live in your area till when you need to switch over. And you'll get plenty of notification from us, plus also from the service providers who obviously be looking for your business. I think it's at least 6 notifications that it's on its way. So then you've got that time to talk to your service provider or other service providers if you want to see what's around.
Just explain the delivery system. So it's going to use your existing copper cable that you've got for your phone line that goes from the telegraph pole in the street, most likely, up to your house. And that part of the infrastructure stays the same. So there's fibre to the node. So that basically means that at the end of your street, there'll be a node. That's where the fibre optic cable ends. And then the existing copper cable network is used and will be refurbished, I guess, if required, to get it from the beginning of your street down to the closest telegraph pole, and then from there using existing infrastructure into your house.
Yeah, that's what's called the fibre to the node service. So the beauty of this technology is, A, it's fast and reliable, but also it doesn't require digging up your street or your driveway or, you know, making a mess, and it's very quick to roll out. And it's getting switched on all over the place in Australia at the moment. The time to build it, it's 6 to 9 months, as opposed to the other fixed line technology, fibre to the premise, which takes 12 months to 18 months.
All right. Well, we've been speaking to Michael Moore. He's the Manager of State Corporate Affairs for the NBN. That's the National Broadband Network. You're bound to hear about it in the next 18 months. Months as it becomes available on the peninsula. Take a listen. That's the sound of our native birds harmoniously living on the peninsula. Now have a listen to this. That's the noise of the Indian minor bird, also known as the common minor. Introduced in Melbourne in the 1860s and described as the cane toad of the sky, these Indian minors are hunting out our native birds and making the peninsula their home. Their numbers are increasing. Something has to be done. Fauna ecologist and secretary of the Southwest Mornington Peninsula Landcare Group, Mr. Malcolm Legg, says something has to be done now and is asking local communities to get behind the issue. He had this to say.
Describe what the Indian minor bird looks like, or the common minor as they are also called.
It's a medium-sized bird. It's brown, a dark brown colour on the body, with a black head and a yellow beak.
So what's the difference between that bird and the noisy one?
Noisy mine is a protected species, so it's a native bird to Australia. They're grey in colour, whereas the common mine or Indian mine is dark brown in colour. They've both got black heads, but the noisy miner's head isn't as black, and they've both got yellow beaks. And the noisy miner belongs to the honeyeater family.
What makes the Indian miner a threat to our native birds here on the peninsula?
In springtime, they pair up and they take over all the hollows of our native birds and our native arboreal mammals. And they're very aggressive. They spread lice and parasites and diseases also to our native wildlife.
Now, you're encouraging people on the peninsula to trap them and then euthanise them. Can you quickly just go through that process and where they can actually obtain a bird trap from?
For those who need to get a bird trap, they just come and see the South West Mornington Peninsula Land Care Group, and we can show them how to build one, or we can rent one out to them for free. So, yeah, that's probably the best way.
Who's funding this project?
Pretty much Land Care.
So if you want to purchase one of these cages, how much will it be? And I believe the Men's Shed are also making them for us.
It's about $15 for material, and then we'll show you how, we'll give you the plans on how to make them. They're very simple and straightforward. We've got about 5 to 10 that we just lend out to people for free, so we're prepared to do that. But then the Men's Shed, I sell them for $180 to $200. It's probably good if community groups buy half a dozen so that they can give them out to people who are interested in doing this.
Have you had any animal activists approach you and say that this is not the right thing to do?
I've only had one person who was concerned that magpies and other native birds would get caught in the trap, but because the entrances are only big enough for common miners, you're not going to get the larger birds into the trap. We also stress to people that this has to be done euthanised in the most humane way possible. And that's why today we went through the three options that are out there for people to euthanise them.
Do you think we'll be able to completely eradicate these birds? And how long do you think it will take?
We probably will never eradicate them all, but if we get the populations down to really low levels, it'll allow our native birds and arboreal mammals to prosper once again. Well, I'll give you an example. In the Yarra Ranges, community group there started in 2011, and they've already eradicated 40,000 miners. So it just goes to show you how quickly it can be done if we get a large response to people being interested in participating in this program.
Do we have any idea of how many Indian miners are on the peninsula at this point?
Oh, you'd probably be looking at a few hundred thousand, I'd say, if not more.
Just lastly, where are they mostly living at the moment?
Pretty much in the date palms and the cypresses. So this time of the year they've all flocked together, and of an evening they roost in the dense trees such as date palms and cypresses.
So they're all over the peninsula then?
The whole peninsula has them, yeah.
Birds need to be euthanised under strict humane rules in accordance with the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Act 1986 and the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals Regulations 2008. Southwest Mornington Peninsula Land Care held a community workshop to demonstrate how to catch the birds. Some had this to say about the workshop.
I think understanding the difference between the two miners, the common miner and the native miner, the noisy miner, and certainly they are a great danger to the native nesting birds. And we certainly need to eradicate them.
And which part of the peninsula do you live on?
In Main Ridge.
Oh, well, I've already built the trap, but we're just having a few issues with getting it to work properly, so it's good to come in and chat to a few people and see what I'm doing wrong and what I need to do to get that to work properly. I'm in Tutkaruk, so we've got a lot of minor birds up there.
They seem to like the urban and suburban type feel.
Yeah, there's a lot of houses, certainly built up suburbia, but there's also a lot of trees that they roost in, and a lot of people have pets, so they come in and take the pet food. So.
What did you learn from today's session?
The correct ways to get rid of them once you've trapped them, I suppose, because that's always an issue with some people as to how to dispose of the body and how to kill the bird once you've caught it.
Hi, I live in Bownarring, and I found it useful today because we've got a few Indian miners, but hearing about the effect they have on the native bush, it's quite insidious, and we can kill feral animals and we can do it humanely, so we may as well. It's a way of helping the bush.
everybody seems to be on board with this issue. Are you going to help spread the word?
Yes, we're actually making a spare trap. We don't have that many around our place, so we'll encourage people to borrow our trap and teach them how to do it. And they have to sign on so they know the protocol, how to kill them humanely and everything.
It's very important, isn't it?
Yes.
It is a real problem. We're over in Balnarring in the Merrick Schoolard area, and we have a real problem over there with them getting, especially in my case, fruit trees, vegetables and that sort of thing, and dog food. So, I'm certainly in the process of getting a trap made, and I'll be looking forward to catching as many as I can.
So living in the Balnarring area, have you noticed the disappearance of some of our native birds and more numbers of these common minor birds?
Yeah, common minor birds, starlings, blackbirds. The doves too of coming in and getting free feeds from the chook food and all that sort of thing, and definitely reducing the rosellas, parrots and all other native birds, which is a great show.
So what would you say to the people out on the peninsula to get behind this land care program?
Well, certainly join up, and I know a lot of people would be adverse to trapping them, but people might be able to put traps on their properties and do it without them getting involved. When you consider the amount of damage they do to the native birds and everything else, it's just something that's got to be done. It won't get better unless we do something about it.
What did you get out of today's seminar?
Well, I got the name of a person who will euthanize the birds that I catch. That's what I came for. Because I've known about the minor problem. Here at Macrae, they seemed to arrive about 5 years ago. We got in touch with an organisation in Melbourne. We made a trap, and then we caught one. But my husband couldn't kill it, and I killed it, and I knew that I could never kill it again. So I came to the meeting today to find out if there was anyone who could kill the birds that I trapped.
What do you think is important that we have groups like this who care about the environment?
Because we have some of the most beautiful birds in the world. The red-browed finches were the ones I used to... I counted 13 red-browed finches on my bird feeder. And we had the wrens, we had the honey eaters, we had the most beautiful birds until about 5 years ago when one summer, or spring probably, the miners arrived. Birds have all gone. We've never seen the red-browed finches again. That's why.
It needs to be said that the grey noisy miner, which also lives on the peninsula, is an Australian native and is protected. The community needs to get behind the eradication of the common miner bird by joining the Peninsula Indian Miner Action Group. Contact Malcolm on his email, malcolmlegg@gmail.com. Legg is spelled L-E-double-G. Or call him on 5950-1279. You can also Google Southwest Mornington Peninsula Land Care for details. Look out for the Indian minor bird, also known as the common miner, in your part of the peninsula. Hope you enjoyed this week's Eye on the Peninsula. If you have any news on the street you want to share with our team, please contact RPPFM on 5975 1234. Next week, Eye on the Peninsula will again bring you up to date with issues that matter to you. We hope you can tune in next Tuesday at noon on 98.7 or 98.3 FM Frankston. You can live stream from our website, rppfm.com.au, and download the RPPFM app. If you miss any Eye on the Peninsula programs, podcasts are available on our website. Thank you to Deborah Maher, executive producer of Eye on the Peninsula, The Bandicoot, Mr. David Harrison, and Kevin Wilcox, our news researcher. I'm Piers Cunningham. Thanks for your company.